Hey, thank you to Helix for sponsoring this podcast. Adam has had his Helix mattress for almost a year now, and he's loving it. It's actually hard to get him up. In fact, he won't stop talking about it. You'll understand what we mean when he goes into detail. Thank you for the detail, Adam, later on the episode. But for now, we want to tell our listeners about a special deal going on. Our Sleepy Time Pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and, as if that's not enough, two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula. That's helixsleep.com/Paula. This is their best offer yet, and I'll bet it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.
The detective came and knocked on the door, and I said, "Is it Renee?" And he just gave me that solemn look.
It was the worst day ever.
The Proof Podcast is back with a new case and a new season. 23 years ago, 18-year-old Renee Ramos went missing. Her body was later found in an empty Home Depot building on the edge of town.
I don't think that they arrested the right people. It's about time somebody's trying to do something.
She had a black eye about 2 weeks before she was murdered.
They are involved. They definitely had her body and her backpack.
You know people are going to judge you, right?
Of course. They're judging me now. They've been judging me damn near my whole life.
You can listen now to Season 2 of Proof, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow along with us as we reinvestigate the murder at the warehouse.
I have to ask, did you kill Renee?
Coming to you live from the Ray Horseman Studio in North Hollywood, California, it's Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, your comedy field guide to life. On today's show, Kelly Dormandy, head strength and conditioning coach for the LA Sparks, talks the science of exercise. How do you get strong, flexible, and lean? And are double-stuffed Oreos part of that equation? Also on the show, face recognition. There's a woman sitting across the table from me right now who looks vaguely familiar, but I can't place her name.
It's me.
Is that a thing? It's not you. Dr. Irving Biederman, director of the Image Understanding Laboratory at USC, can explain what's going on in my brain right now. I believe I see this woman every week. Anyway, in fact, not a week goes by that I don't see her. Pat, Petunia, Pepsi, there's something to do. I know the Pepsi's involved. Anyway, I'm Adam Felber, the guy who gets this show's metaphorical weights properly racked. And now, meet the woman whose kettlebells are always flying off the handle. Oh, that's who you are. It's Paula Poundstone.
Thank you very much. So nice to be here.
Welcome, Paula, and thank you to tonight's cool house band double bass player, Dave Fortin.
Dave Fortin. Yeah.
Oh, for double.
Double bass.
Gotcha.
Double bass.
Paula, let's talk possums.
We were on our way out of the Ray Horseman Studios. I don't know. Was it last week?
Two weeks ago.
I can't remember. And this, you step out into a little walkway outdoors, and there's a fence.
You're being kind, because this is an alley.
Okay, you step out into an alley, and there's a fence with, like, ivy on top of
right.
it, a lot of growth. And just as we step out, literally, at like, our the fence
at
is about
level.
To
yeah.
our face,
yeah.
There's a giant possum.
Giant possum, like no more than, like, 2 or 3 feet from our faces.
Yeah. Now, I argued that it was at least a cute possum. I thought he had a cute face. I think so, too.
I have had a couple of possum encounters, and I think they're some of the grossest, vilest creatures I've ever seen. But as possums go, this was a cute one.
Yeah, it was a cute. I don't know. Yeah, it just had like a soft kind of a face.
I don't think he's going to make it on Miranda Street with that soft, cute face of his.
Yeah,
this is a tough
neighborhood. Yeah, well, he was probably looking to score.
Yeah.
the way possums do. So you've seen possums before?
I've had some possum encounters, and they were really, like, I learned in my first possum encounter that when it comes to fight or flight, I'm flight.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because my friend and I were taking a break from a movie at his place. It was in Silver Lake, and this possum, I guess, scaled all the way up this fence from down in the ravine and came out of the bush, like, as close to me as you are right now.
Uh-huh.
And me and my friend Kent Osborne, if you're listening, I know you do, had completely different reactions. I ran away, and Kent stood there like this, as though he was going to fight the possum. And I was like, Ken, what are you doing? And he was like, I don't know. It's not backing down. I'm like, well, you can. He's like, well, what do I do? And he was just this.
He didn't want to turn and have the thing spring onto the back of his head.
I don't think possums do that. Now, you've had some possum experiences.
I don't know what they do. I mean, would they? I'll tell you. Well, a long time ago, my cat Scout got out of my house. And my cats are indoor cats. And but Scout got out and through a window. And she was around the neighborhood.
Right.
I even saw her here and there. I just couldn't catch her. And she was all, like, freaked out. So I got a, what's it called? A humane trap.
A humane trap.
And so it's a long cage with a thing that trips the doors that's in the center. And then the animal has to go in and it's far enough in that it wouldn't get its tail caught or something.
That's humane.
And so I use, very humane, and I used...
Is there a little armchair in there as well?
It's very comfortable. It's a big screen TV. Nature Channel.
You give it your Netflix password.
I donated to it. So what I used was chicken tenders from the Jack in the Box down the street, and I put that in the center.
I would argue that that makes it an inhumane trap.
I got to tell you, I caught, I think it was the same possum over and over again.
Oh, because you kept letting it go?
Well, yeah, I didn't want it.
What, are you letting it off with a warning? How is that going to solve the problem?
Scout. That was who I was looking for, Scout.
Now Jorge just dropped something.
Yeah,
everybody gets a turn being Bonnie Burns on this show.
Our recording engineer.
Oh, it was Ray Horseman, right.
He's building with an erector set over near the... It's a lot of tools. Maybe now is not the time. But anyways, so that was my possum.
You were doing catch and release.
Well, it turns out, I don't know what possums do. Like, I don't know, like, if they would hurt a person, but they love chicken tenders.
They could murder a chicken tender.
They love the chicken tenders from the Jack in the Box. And I know this because at the drive-up window at the Jack in the Box near our house, there was off some dead possums.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, because they were trying to order.
They were in the drive-up lane, yeah. It's just not safe at all. They go, we'd like to have the chicken. Ah!
I don't even know what you're thinking of when you trap a possum just long enough to give it a meal and then let it go. I mean, what's your plan there? What's the end game?
I had no... My plan was to catch my cat Scout.
Oh,
you thought the whole time I was trying to catch possums in the neighborhood?
Yeah, I thought you were trying to protect Scout.
So maybe
possums.
Somewhere along the story, you dropped the thread.
I lost interest.
Yeah. That happens.
Yeah, well, you know, possums. You know, possums disgust me. So it's all right. Now they don't disgust me as much as they disgust Tony Anita Hull.
One of our producers, Tony Anita Hull, hated that possum.
She freaked
out.
She
did not think it was cute at all. And I would, if it had been like on a possum display where there was some sort of glass between me and it,
right.
A, that wouldn't be right.
Right.
But B, I would have really enjoyed it more.
Right.
Yeah. Tony
I thought what was ironic about that is it was 2 weeks ago. Regular listeners will know that was the night when Jonah Knuckles Glickman, our security detail, was not here.
Yeah.
So Tony was our security detail. That was the night she was being Tony Anita Hulk, if you remember.
So she had to keep walking by that possum.
Yeah, she had to walk by that possum. She was like, she couldn't have protected us from a tiny rodent.
Yeah.
So so if you were one of our guests that night, I just want to say you dodged a bullet because had anybody attacked.
That possum works for a local gang. I don't know. Like, would they attack you? When it was in the humane trap, it did hiss at me. But I had this feeling when we were walking out and, like, all of a sudden it was just there. Like, you're right. Like, 2 feet in front of our faces, right at face level. I was just afraid that it was going to, like, attack my face. And then the people go, well.
This one didn't look angry. The one I encountered with my friend Kent. Its
it
face
angry.
Was like viscous and snarly.
Yeah.
And it looked like, did you ever see that Jim Henson movie that wasn't a Muppet movie? It was called The Dark Crystal.
No, I didn't
There's
see that.
There's a creature in The Dark Crystal. The evil creatures are known as Skeksis.
Skeksis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The possum that me and Kent encountered was a Skeksis kind of thing. This was more like a cuddly possum that might you find in a stuffed animal form.
This one was cute, but it still could have given you a possum face.
Yeah,
I just picture it attacking my face.
Yeah, I'm sure Tony Anita Hull is
possum
dreaming
face.
Of that. Have you been dreaming about that since it happened, Tony Anita Hull?
Yeah, Tony.
Yes,
Tony has a long history of possum face.
So we're just re-traumatizing her right now.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, Tony.
Well, Paula, over the last couple of weeks, I want to change the subject. We both dodged the polar vortex.
The polar vortex was here on Miranda Street tonight. Were you outside at all?
It's chilly on Miranda Street.
It's so cold.
No, it's like 50 degrees.
No, I burrowed inside one of the mattresses.
Really?
Yeah,
I huddled up with a family of possums.
It was really cold.
There are mattresses tonight, and there's a window on Miranda Street tonight.
I suckled warm milk from a possum on the fence.
I think
that's why it's angry.
Yeah, that's...
You really risk possum face when you suckle warm milk from a...
Kids, if you're out there, fly straight, fly right, and don't suckle possums.
Yeah, don't suckle warm milk from the possum's teat. There, it's been said.
No, but you and I were both in the Midwest during the polar vortex.
I was in Louisville, Kentucky during the polar vortex, and I happened to be sitting backstage. I was staring at my flat thing. I'm not proud of that. But I was looking at Twitter, and on the Twitter feed comes this like a blurb about that the governor of Kentucky had said that because they closed the schools because of it was so cold. The governor of Kentucky said that they were soft.
Kids have gone soft.
Yeah, kids have gone soft. And as I'm sitting there reading, like, I knew I was in Louisville, but I sort of forgot where Louisville was. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, I think I'm in Kentucky. And I was so excited when I got to go on and talk to the voters.
Oh, because you love to talk to people about things that are happening in their place right now.
Yes,
and you
yes.
Just and they apparently handed that by the
they
news.
Apparently had a joyful... Imagine having a governor that calls, like, his constituents soft.
Soft because they don't want their children to freeze.
Yeah, they said that there were, I don't know if it was this way in Louisville, but that there were parts of the country where if you're outside for more than a few minutes, you would get frostbite.
Well, I got to Chicago, you know, for a Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me during the vortex, and I got there maybe...
Mid-vortex.
Now, I got there maybe like 5 or 6 hours after it was negative 24 degrees.
Wow.
But the vortex had lifted or de-vorticized. Uh-huh. And so by the time I got there, it was negative five.
Yeah. And you were still cold?
Still cold enough.
Shit.
That, like, I literally walked out of the subway. Within a half a block, my nose was running. And not to be too graphic about it, but the snot in my mustache... froze.
Oh, that's a nice look.
That's pretty graphic, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a bad look.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, that, and so the date went how?
It wasn't a date. I was there for wait, don't tell me.
Well, it had been, I think they said it was in the negatives before I arrived in Louisville. And then when I got there, it was 20 degrees. And so I am a warming trend.
You're a warming trend.
I am.
Absolutely. I am not, because as you know, my mustache froze. But I did dress in layers because I don't have any winter clothes.
Hey, what'd you use for the first layer?
I know. I told you this story. Yes, I wore a Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone t-shirt.
Wow.
Garnered from the Max Fun Store, maxfunstore.com. And it was a good bottom layer.
So you had the confidence of knowing that several layers down, you had on a good-looking shirt.
A very attractive shirt that touts a popular and growing new podcast.
There you go.
Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. And even though I couldn't see it, I was aware that on the back of my shirt, there was an amusing quotation from Paula Poundstone.
Yeah. It just makes a person feel confident.
It did. It gave me the confidence to do that Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And, might I add, win.
Yeah. Oh, did you win?
I won in a Paula Poundstone. So if you want to win at Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, you might consider buying a Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone t-shirt.
I'm going to have to do that because I never win.
You've won a couple of times. But I think I was there the first time you won.
Yes, but I've been there for 17 years.
Yes. So. I think I was there for your first victory, and I know I was there on a notable occasion when you got zero right.
Did I once get
zero
right?
I think you're
one
of the only people. I think it might have been in Hawaii.
I got zero right in Hawaii?
I might be conflating two different occasions.
Maybe I was more than laid back.
Yeah, that was one of the first times we hung out, was in Honolulu way back when.
I totally forgot about that, and yet I still have the grass skirt in the closet. Hold on.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Everybody at that show was impressed. That hula dance you did made for great radio.
Yeah.
What else? What else do we have? I think we're ready to get to our guests and stuff, right?
I'm ready to.
All right.
I'm ready to go.
We're back here in Los Angeles, snug, laughing at the cold. And coming up, Dr. Irving Biederman will explain facial recognition, and Kelly Dormandy will help tune up our bodies. Although, if I were any buffer, Paula would no longer recognize my face. Covered with muscles, it would be. Much more to come after this on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. Okay, we're back. Hey, Paula, I know you work out with a trainer.
I do.
This is something you do.
Yeah.
And you suspect that your trainer is not always looking out for your best interests.
I don't think he is. If he gets a phone call, I end up planking longer.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. He's done it to you a lot, right? Because he has that Apple Watch you were talking about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly. When he was on the phone with Verizon, I did over 1,000 sit-ups.
Really? Because he was on hold.
Yeah.
You'd think he would just listen to the whole music. And questions have been coming up in your life that you've been asking me randomly about exercise. And we thought that we could maybe address a few of them. For instance, your ability to hold a plank versus Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's planking time.
Yeah, well, before she got sick, I don't know about now.
Okay.
But before this last bout of cancer.
Yes.
And she's kicked cancer's ass, I believe, 3 times
right
now.
And she's 115 years old.
Yeah, and a genius. But she could plank for 30 seconds.
Right, which was longer than you could when you started training.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of your questions was, is that just because she weighs 7.5 pounds?
Yeah.
Or is it just because she's stronger than you?
Yeah. That is one of my questions.
That's one of the questions.
Yeah. So we have with us...
Well, to get to the core of your fitness questions, as it were, please welcome the Assistant Athletics Director for Strength and Conditioning at Loyola Marymount University and the Head Coach for Strength and Conditioning for the Los Angeles Sparks. It's the same person, Kelly Dormandy.
Hey, Kelly.
Hey, Paula, it's been almost a year now since I got my Helix mattress. And as you remember, there was some drama surrounding Helix mattresses.
Because when Helix first
sponsored us, Bonnie took the mattress and she's been loving it. But finally, I got my chance to get a Helix mattress and I sleep so well. I mean, the family bed is where we all gather. We watch movies in our room occasionally and everybody just piles on it and it's comfy. And yet when one person hops on, the other half of the mattress doesn't fly up. I'm a fan.
Well, you know, Adam, everybody is unique and everyone sleeps differently. That's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. Models with memory foam layers to provide optimal pressure relief if you sleep on your side. Models with a more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions. Plus, enhanced cooling features to keep you from overheating at night. And if your spine needs some extra TLC, they got you. Every Helix mattress has a hybrid design combining individually wrapped steel coils in the base with premium foam layers on top. It is the perfect combination of comfort and support.
I agree with that last bit. I don't get all the technical stuff about the mattress, but it is soft and supportive. Helix offers 20 unique mattresses, the award-winning Lux, which I got, and ultra-premium Elite Collections, the Helix Plus, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, and the Helix Kids mattress, designed for growing bodies and endorsed by child sleep experts, and my daughter now wants one. So, how will you know which Helix mattress works best for you and your body? You go to their website, take the Helix Sleep Quiz, and you find your perfect mattress match in under 2 minutes.
You know, when you said you can't follow all the technical stuff, it's really not that technical. You know, no matter what way you sleep, they have a mattress that will support and comfort you. How hard is that?
You know, when you say it that way, it seems a lot simpler. I take it back. That's my boner.
And your personalized mattress is shipped straight to your door, free of charge. And Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping on it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress.
Well, I like that there's a warranty, but they can pry that mattress from my cold, dead hands. I took the sleep quiz. I was matched with the Helix Midnight Lux. I got the Lux. And I love it. It is such an upgrade from my old mattress.
You know, I think Bonnie got the Midnight Lux.
She did.
Too.
Yeah.
You're not here. Don't want to take Adam's word for it? Well, you got Bonnie's word. Helix has been awarded the #1 mattress picked by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors of sleep medicine as a go-to solution for improving your sleep. Your sleepy time pal Helix is offering up to 30% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners.
That's a lot, and it's already not that expensive a mattress. Go to helixsleep.com/Paula.
That's helixsleep.com/Paula.
This is their best offer yet. It's fantastic. It won't last long.
With Helix, better sleep starts now. Well, Not right now.
And if you're gonna get it anyway,
use our code.
Hey, Paula. You know, every once in a while, we get a new advertiser that I get super excited about. And I have to say, just because of the circumstances of my life, right now, I'm really excited about our new advertiser, Quince, of Quince.com, the clothing provider.
Not to be mistaken for Quince from Midsummer Night's Dream. And let me just say this, and maybe it's not important to an advertisement, but when I was in the fourth grade, our class put on a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Okay.
And I played Peter Quince. There's the connection.
One of the mechanicals. That's a great connection. Also, yes, has nothing to do with this, which is that Quince is an online clothing store. And as you know, Paula, I've lost a little weight lately.
Oh, right.
75 pounds. Yeah. So I literally have no clothes that are in my size until I just ordered some stuff at Quince. And I figured, like, here's a chance for me to create a new look for myself. A whole new image.
And how's it going?
Not bad. I mean, the clothes are fantastic. I know that you ordered some too. What I got is the Comfort Stretch Traveler 5-pocket pants. And I got I got the 100% European linen shirt, and it looks breezy and it fits beautifully. And these are like premium pieces of clothing that are selling for like, you know, $30 a piece or starting at $30 at quince.com. It's awesome. I look good.
I ordered the brushed lounge jogger.
Ooh.
And, you know, I put them on when I came back from New York. I pulled them on and I swear to you, okay, this is not scientific because I was tired already.
Right.
But they were so soft and so comfortable that honestly, like right as I got them up to my waist, I think my eyes closed. They're so, it's a softness. It's a kind of softness that I don't think I've ever experienced in a garment, honestly.
You know, my drawstring European linen trousers are a little bit like that, too. Like, so comfortable that I just want to hang out with myself.
Sure. Yeah. And they're European. Keep that in mind.
They are so European. And you can get those kinds. You can get washable silk tops. You can get 14-karat gold jewelry and, like, all these accessories.
Quince sells a lineup of timeless pieces that keep their customers looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm not certain that I look chic, but certainly if I did, it's not going to take a lot of effort.
I now look chic and I feel pretty great. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabric. It's all good as far as I can see.
Is it my imagination or do they cut out the middleman?
They cut out the middleman, Paula Poundstone.
I love it when they cut out the middleman. That's the thing, they cut out the middleman. That's fantastic.
So be like me and Paula. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/nobody for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/nobody to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/nobody. And honestly, I look fantastic. Paula, you won't be able to keep your hands off me.
Oh, I can't wait. And don't think that if you had to return something, don't think you're sending it to a middleman because they cut out the middleman.
They cut out the middleman. That's quince.com/nobody. And if you're going to do it anyway,
use our code.
Jesus fucks.
Get ready for the miracle of mega. A comedy podcast from the staff of a fictional mega church.
And not only does he fuck, but he's the best at it.
I'm Holly Loren.
And I'm Greg Hess.
Our characters, Hallie and Gray, welcome a new guest each week, played by some of the biggest names in comedy and podcasting.
Like Scott Aukerman, Lauren Lapkus, Paul Scheer, Jason Mantzoukas, Cecily Strong, and Duncan Trussell.
I just love to think about that, the light shining down on all those corpses in the water and Noah just going by and maybe a mom being like, please, we're running out of energy. Can you please let us on the boat?
It's completely improvised and it's devilishly funny.
Is there any question you have for us about, you know, what it means to live a life in Christ?
I guess, how much do you think is bullshit?
There's a new episode every Sunday.
Listen and subscribe to Mega, wherever you get your podcasts.
Best I ever had. Best I, y'all can do it, y'all can do it. Y'all sing along. You know what I'm saying? Here go. Jesus, you the best.
Jesus, you're the best.
You to be the best.
Jesus, you're
Jesus,
the best.
You the best. Okay, never mind.
Best I ever had. Best wow. I ever had.
Thank you so much for coming.
Yes, and thank you, house band Dave Fort. Those are some hot licks. Welcome, Kelly.
Thank you for having me.
So, let's get to immediately some of your questions.
Like, okay, my warm up is five, suicides running back and forth, 125 rope jumps and 25 jumping jacks. Sometimes, there's more after that. But frankly, I'm exhausted after that. Why do you have to warm up to begin with? Why isn't that counted as the actual exercise?
The warm up counts as part of your exercise. At least in our world, our warm-ups are trying to get the body temperature up, priming the muscles that you're going to use for your training session. Uh-huh. You want to sweat a little bit and get the blood flow going before you actually task your body whatever it is that you're asking it to do.
Now, why
do you
that?
Need to do that?
So you don't hurt yourself. So you don't pull a hamstring or overtax yourself too quickly, too soon before you're warm enough to do whatever it is your trainer is going to ask you to do.
Uh-huh. And that's what would happen if you weren't...
Potentially, depending on what it is, the task that you're being asked to do. Uh-huh. Going out and running a marathon or running an all-out sprint or playing a professional basketball game is one thing, but depends what it is, the intensity and the nature of the exercise you're going
to
do.
Uh-huh. So I'm not likely to pull a muscle doing jumping jacks.
Hopefully not.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah, the idea is, I guess, that you do less high-intense exercises to get warmed up, and then you can really do the rough stuff.
It would be just like me to pull a muscle doing the
warm-up?
Doing the rope jumps or the jumping jacks or the running back and forth.
I would guess that warm-up injuries are very uncommon. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah, unless otherwise, you're probably not warming up correctly if you are getting hurt in your warm-up.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I've never gotten hurt from it. Just exhausted. Like, I have no stamina. What can I do to work on my stamina?
Going in for more what we call aerobic and slow duration, long duration, but slow intensity and lower intensity exercise. So you said you started with suicides.
Yeah.
So what exactly? So when I think
it's
of
just
a suicide...
running back. Well, okay. When
she
I think
eats
of suicide...
five double-stuffed Oreos.
People offing themselves. But...
That's the slow suicide I see her commit every week.
No, just running back and run one end, touch the mat, run back the other end, touch the mat. It's not. So it's a small gym, so it's not that big.
On an RP scale of 10 being the hardest thing you've ever done, how would you rank it on a scale of 1 to 10?
Oh, 2. That part is not hard.
So that's a good warm up.
But yet you're exhausted at the end of it.
Yeah, well I am. I have zero endurance. No, I'm not exhausted after I do the suicide. I'm exhausted after I do the
jumping jacks.
The rope jumps. I sometimes don't make it all the way through.
Because it's a difficult task for you to get 125 revolutions without stopping?
Yeah, yeah. And I do sometimes stop before I'm done. And he'll say, "Why are you stopping?" And I say, "Because I couldn't go on any longer."
It's a good answer, right?
Yeah, that's what I think. He goes, "I didn't tell you to stop." I go, "I know. I couldn't go on.
Clearly, you get winded, right? That's the thing. It's not that your legs are hurting. You're winded.
Oh, no, I'm not hurting.
So is it important to get winded for exercise to be effective?
Yes and no. I think it depends on what it is you're trying to do and what your goals are. So when you talk about a professional athlete and the intensity at which they play at, they're going to absolutely get winded throughout their training in order to prepare themselves for the sport and the nature of their task.
Uh-huh.
But if it's somebody who's coming to me who's just beginning mm-hmm. and looking to just start moving and do the basics and maybe lose some weight, mm-hmm. well, then I'm going to ask them to do something entirely different.
Like, and what are you going to ask them to do?
I'm going to tell him to get out and move.
He asked as a man who's hoping to lose some weight.
Just start walking, moving, get out. You live in LA. Not right now. It's a little cold, but start hiking. Go down to the beach. Do things you like to do instead of doing things that you're forced to do that you don't like.
Yeah. Well, okay. I don't mind the workout. I just wish I had more sustenance. All right, like, here's the thing. One of the things is that he has these little weights, and I use them just like bending at the elbow.
You're
and,
doing curls.
You're doing bicep curls.
Is that what they are? Yeah. Bicep curls, sure. And I think I used to do it with like 5-pound weights or 8-pound weights or something like that. And it was, it's doable. And then the other day, there were 15-pound weights.
And you're wondering
and
why.
And I'm like staggering beneath them. And why would that burn more fat than the other?
When you build muscle, you burn fat. Muscle burns fat.
So when you build muscle, I wasn't building muscle when I was doing it without as heavy weights.
We got to keep increasing because your muscle keeps getting stronger.
You are to a degree, but you have to elicit more change over time. So if my body gets used to and adapted to doing the same thing, it's not going to make a change. So if I'm always doing body weight or I'm always using 5 pounds, there's going to come a point in time where that's no longer taxing for my system.
And so you could just do that every day and it wouldn't do anything at all because your body sees it coming.
It's going to do something to a degree, but you're going to get to a point where you're not going to necessarily see change anymore. And so if you want to take it one step further and
see
even more change, well, then you're going to have to alter up your regime to do something different to elicit the change.
And adding more weight is one of those things.
Right? If indeed you wanted to get stronger and then increase your muscle mass, which in turn will reduce your body fat.
Well, look, somebody's got to defend us from those possums, and it's not going to be Tony Anita Hall.
Yeah, I do. It's exactly what I want to do.
So, all right. Now, let's talk about your trainer.
Yeah.
And his iWatch.
Yeah, my
Apple
trainer
Watch.
Has a. My trainer, I think, has a little addiction problem with screen devices.
Okay, now
and
does
so
it
he yeah. just leaves me doing an exercise if he gets like a phone call or if he's texting on his thing. It took me a while to figure it out, but I'm like, yeah, you know, I don't think this has anything to do with the actual exercise.
So I guess the important question is there any harm in that? Like if he leaves Paula doing sit-ups while he's working things out with Bank of America, is that bad?
Sit-ups necessarily may not be as concerned with, but if he has you on a treadmill at top-end speed and walks away and you fly off the back, I might be a little concerned.
That would be funny, though.
We could all enjoy that.
Getting a little more aerobic exercise isn't really a terrible thing.
Not at all.
Okay, so he can talk on the phone.
Oh, yeah. Every now and then, if I am on the treadmill thing, it's not a treadmill. It's this steppy thingy.
Stairmaster?
I don't know. Is that what it is? The steppy thingy and the arm things move?
Elliptical.
It's an elliptical. Yeah.
Does that, by the way, I heard that doesn't do any good at all. Does that do anything?
It all can do good. It's just a matter of how you use it.
Do you like the ellipticals or do you recommend other things?
What do you mean how you use it?
Well, if you get on there and you're going
for
a walk.
Do it?
Well, yeah, but if the intensity at which you do it. If I go in there and for me personally, I'm going in and trying to make the most of my 30 minutes. So by the end of it, I want to be drenched. I want to be sweating. I want my heart rate to reach up close to my max so that I can elicit change.
And you seem like such a nice person.
There's not nice about that. you just don't want to train with her now.
All before Christmas, there were those ads for the Peloton bikes. And, you know, where they do it with a screen and there's someone. Isn't that the idea that it's like somehow customized to the person?
I do not know what a Peloton bike is.
Have you seen those ads? Do you know what that is?
I believe you can tune into certain sessions and they'll train you through it like you're in a spin class.
Yeah.
So they'll talk to you and motivate you.
Yeah.
It's like a virtual spin class.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would like to make one of those where I'm just sitting in a chair eating Doritos.
And counseling other people to
do
the same?
Yeah, and I say to the person, yeah, get moving.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Keep pumping. Be with you in a minute.
It's kind of like what your trainer does to you.
That's what my trainer does. He'll every now and then he'll like stick his head out of the windows of his office and he'll go faster. He has no idea how fast I was going to begin with. Just go faster.
But that's not necessarily terrible advice, right?
He's trying to motivate you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure it's working.
Okay. It doesn't sound like this.
Actually, I love working out with this guy. It is fun. Okay. But I just wondered why, like, you had to be miserable in order for it to actually do anything to your body.
Well, some people like the misery, though.
Oh,
do you like the misery?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Hence the statement.
Do you give that misery to others? Talk about training the Los Angeles Sparks, because I love going to Sparks games, and I noticed you wore the 2016 championship ring. We're going to take a picture of that and put it on the website, because it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's great.
So do you torture the team? What do you do with them?
I do. At times of need, I would say I torture my college kids more than my pros.
Oh, really?
Yes. Because I see them in the off season a lot more. So my pros I see predominantly in season. So I'm trying to maintain their strength and make sure they stay healthy so that they can last the duration of the season and get to the playoffs and win a championship.
Right.
So you have to be careful how you approach training with an athlete in season versus off season.
You don't want to injure them.
Don't want to injure them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We don't
want to
overtrain
them. It's all warm up. It's nothing but warm up.
Not all warm up. No.
Yeah,
before the game, it's warm up.
It's just the 5 pound weights. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
yeah. Somewhat. A little bit more than that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we could at some point get you a workout with the LA Sparks, I'm sure, because that would be some great video.
LA Sparks don't want me working out with them.
I'm sure we could.
I would be a distraction.
That is true. Yeah. That is true. Yeah. But I bet, is there any way we could get her into the gym
I'll
someday?
Work out.
Yes! I would love to see that. Our listeners would love to see that.
Well, we how get... could listeners see it?
Well, there's this invention called the internet.
Oh!
And we could post a right. video.
I,
yeah.
Well, that I would go do.
That would
be fun.
I love that idea. I'd love to make it happen. Are the training sessions like whole team at a time, or it's individual? What do you do?
In the college world, it's more often whole team at a time.
Uh-huh.
In the pro world, it's more one-on-one basis or small groups.
Okay. Now, tell me. You say you only do during the season for the Sparks.
Mm-hmm.
Do some of the players show up at the beginning of the season, not in the shape that you want them to be in? I mean, like, I'm sure most of them are pretty responsible and maintain their fitness throughout the year. But do you ever have that one player where you're like, wow, this is not going to be just maintenance. This is going to be...
Somebody comes in looking like a Lazy Boy recliner, and you rise.
They know to come ready, because the season starts right away.
And you're starting with the two-pound weights with them.
The two-pound weights. Or... the higher, the 20-pound in the weight vest for those players.
So that I can weight make up vest? For, you use
yeah,
a weight
so I can
vest?
Make up for the fact that they haven't been training.
Oh, yeah, I see. Yeah.
So that
yeah.
does happen.
Rarely. But the players are very good.
Okay.
Because we have to start playing right away.
Yeah.
And they want to get on the court and they want to play.
And they're into this.
Yes.
This is something that they want. My trainer will remind me to engage my core.
Yeah.
What does that mean, even?
So there's a difference between abs and core.
Oh, boy.
That's something we civilians don't know about.
See,
we
I
really
think I've been engaging my abs when he says engage my core.
Right, and I sent my core out. I haven't gotten it back from the shop yet.
Yeah. There's no shame in that.
So when I think of abs, I think of burning. Almost kind of like P90X. Lots of repetitions, feeling the burn.
Uh-huh. Right.
Core, from a performance standpoint, is bracing and connecting hips and shoulders so that our athletes can move efficiently and effectively and reduce their risk for injury. So planks, side planks, glute bridges. If your core is...
Glute bridges? Yep. What's a glute bridge?
You're laying on your back. Picture knees are bent at 90 degrees. Heels are down. Toes are up. You're going to drive through your heels and lift your butt up until your torso and your thighs are in a straight line. Can you picture that?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. I can picture that too.
Yeah.
I did that when I went after I hurt my back. That was one of the exercises.
Yes, After I had my back surgery, that was an exercise I had to learn how to do.
They didn't tell me it was a glute bridge. Did you ever see that movie, Glute Bridge Over River Kwai? it's really good.
That would be a good one.
Yes. Really good.
It's back of the video store, as it were. So you're saying that the core is, although it's in the same place as the abs, mm-hmm. when you're talking about abs, you're talking about the six-pack. And when you're talking about the core, you're talking about the connection that keeps you healthy.
Support, yes, and supporting the spine and the pelvis.
Supporting the spine and the pelvis?
Yep.
Well, wait a minute. Isn't the pelvis below the spine? Who's supporting it?
When you're bracing your core, so think trunk. So from shoulders all the way through hips and your glutes. That's your core.
Okay.
And then you have your extremities. So if your core is solid, then your extremities are moving the manner that you want them to efficiently and effectively.
Uh-huh.
Whereas if not, think of the analogy I would give as Gumby. The athlete that moves like Gumby is the athlete that's far more likely to get injured because they can't brace and control themselves when they stop and change direction or jump up and grab a rebound and land.
Like the guy, okay, you know the guy that's outside a lot of...
You're gonna bring up those wavy arms.
That's exactly what I'm gonna bring up.
I knew you were. Oh,
right. I can't. You know the tire stores and the inflatable guy that flails.
Yeah. You don't want all that going on.
Yeah,
you don't want that going on.
No. That guy's not engaging his core. Is that correct?
Exactly. He's not engaging his core. Absolutely.
Yeah. Next time I drive by one of those, I don't care what time it is in the morning. I'm shouting out, "Engage your core!"
Right. It's not gonna work. Yeah, because his core is arguably made of fabric and wind.
He doesn't know that.
Yeah, he doesn't. He should work harder. You're absolutely right. So you've actually seen that happen. When you watch a basketball game, you can tell which players are more likely to get injured just by the way they move?
To some degree, yes. Yes.
Wow.
Huh.
You saw me walk in. Am I okay? Am I going
to
be...
You're ready to go. Let's suit up.
Okay.
So when you're watching a basketball game, you're like, okay, number two is going down.
I watch the game because I enjoy the game, but when I'm watching my players in practice, I'm watching how they're moving.
Uh-huh. And so when somebody falls, you go, "Told you so!"
Depending on how they fall, maybe.
Do you help them fall, or is that a completely different...
You got to fall gracefully, right? And not get hurt.
Well, yeah.
They're going to be on the floor. You're going to fall at certain points in time.
Yeah.
But the whole point is, through our training, can we put the athlete in a position to be less likely to get hurt when those incidents come up in sport? Because it's so unpredictable. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I learned to fall in my acting training.
Well, stage you combat. To fall.
Yeah, falling is important. You got to learn how to fall
right. It's been really helpful here in the studio.
Well, I don't do as much physical comedy now that I podcast.
Yeah.
But no, I had to learn.
I've seen you fall. It's fantastic.
It's great. I'm very good at it.
Oh, my God. Actually, that reminds me of something. I love high-top sneakers. And I was going to get some before my last ping pong tournament. And then I decided, because I'm worried about my ankles turning. But then I decided not to because they were made of leather and I felt bad about that. And then I almost got some canvas ones. And I thought, well, how does that help?
Don't expect this story to go anywhere.
How could canvas, canvas high tops actually support the ankles, do you think?
Chucks.
This might Chucks be a little out
well,
of your...
actually, Chucks are a great, I have Chucks on, Chucks are a great squatting shoe.
You do?
A great squatting
yeah,
shoe?
For, yeah, they have great basic
for
support.
For squatters?
For doing
like,
squats.
So if you're going to go into somebody's house and not move when they ask
no, no,
you
no,
to?
Squatting, no, like
squatting
with
your
legs.
With your legs.
Yeah.
A great squatting shoes?
Yeah. A great shoe to wear when you squat.
Well, do you change shoes in order to squat? That seems odd.
Yes, we do. Actually, we do. lifters do, yes.
Lifters change.
Yes. We have different shoes that we'll use for like Olympic weightlifting that'll have what's called like a heel lift. So it puts your position, it gives you more dorsiflexion or ankle mobility to be able to put yourself in the position to do it correctly while keeping a neutral spine, which probably means nothing to you, but it helps.
No.
It means a little something to me.
Yeah,
you're
no.
giving me a look like
no.
I have no clue.
When you, as soon as you said neutral spine, it all came together for
okay,
me.
Good. All
right,
okay, good.
But no,
my spine is not neutral. My spine is a goddamn Democrat.
It sure is.
My spine is against the wall. I don't care what anybody says.
Which is amazing because your glutes are Republican.
No, they are not. That's why I don't. That's
you
why
talk to them a little more, Paula.
That's why I don't engage them.
They're not Trump Republicans, but they're Republicans.
Hey, listener, it's Zach Harper, Amin El-Hassan, and Anthony Mays of Cinephobe. You may be asking yourself, what is Cinephobe? Amin, would you like to fill in the people?
Cinephobe is the podcast where Zach and I watch movies that are poorly rated on Rotten Tomatoes and try to ascertain.
Well, we're trying to ascertain?
Yes.
Okay. Ascertain.
Whether or not they're accurately poorly rated, or maybe they didn't get a fair shake. Cinephobe, produced by this guy, Anthony Mays.
Hey, that's me. I produced this show. I also watch the movies, even though that wasn't included in the description, and I also ascertain. This month is... Wow!
Whoa!
Oh, Maze, why'd you say that? Supercharge it. So that this promo can remain evergreen.
I feel like explaining a little bit more.
In 60 seconds?
I don't know. Maybe I don't bring attention to it. Assuring people like, look, if you listen, you're going to get it. Just give it time.
That's a good promo. Just listen to it.
Give it time.
You'll figure it out.
Is this the promo right now?
Isn't it? Okay, I think we got it.
Cinefo.
Wherever you get podcasts.
The spread of misinformation has fueled our cultural divide and increased our collective anxiety about the future. Tackling misinformation isn't a simple task, but it's important. And that's why I'm so excited to tell you about Conspirituality, a podcast that's dismantling New Age cults, wellness grifters, and conspiracy mad yogis.
On the show, a journalist, a cult researcher, and a philosophical skeptic walk into a bar, and the bartender says, no, 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 it's not that old joke. They dive deep into current events, such as RFK Jr.'s involvement in mainstreaming dangerous anti-vax rhetoric. They crowdsource, research, analyze, and dream up answers to the problem with, get this, proven science as their ultimate guiding light.
I highly recommend you check out Conspirituality's fascinating episodes on creating comedy in the MAGAverse with Jordan Klepper or RFK Jr. flirting with body fascism.
And you've listened to a bunch of them at this point, Paul, I know, and you tell me you love it.
I do. They're fascinating, and my favorite part is they use, wait for it, proven science.
And
if there's any kids listening, that's a class we used to take. Proven science as their ultimate guiding light. I love that.
From exploring cults to analyzing our cultural and political landscape, the Conspirituality podcast will help you stay informed about misinformation and help you resist fear tactics. Find Conspirituality on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay. How are we going to be this next year?
Oh, it's going to be fantastic.
Right.
Get your tickets.
I should get my tickets. Mm-hmm. I was telling Kelly before, that I had these friends who had LA Sparks season tickets and great ones, six rows behind the Sparks bench. They were great. So I would go to the games all the time. And then
my friend stopped buying the season tickets. So I stopped going to Sparks games.
Not really a friend, if you ask me.
Yeah, I know.
Were you close enough that you could tell if they were engaging their core?
They you know, this was before Kelly's time with the team, because you've been there for how long?
4 years.
4 years. This was more like 5 to 8 years ago. They needed Kelly. Their core was not engaged.
You know, there wasn't always this science to exercise the way there is now, right? Yeah. Now there's like a lot of physics and, you know, there's just stuff that people know because of science. Like, would it be an inspirational, if I did go to a Sparks game soon and I were to shout out, engage your core, would that mean something to the women playing?
To me, it would, and I could relay the message to them.
It would be a weird thing to yell at a game, I think.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would yell it when the other team is taking free throws, because it would be distracting.
Yeah.
It would be a weird enough thing to yell that, yeah, like you might manage to make them miss a free throw.
Tighten your abs.
Right.
Support your spine. Yeah, yeah. These are the kind of things that you shout at them, right?
Absolutely, in the weight room, yes.
I do shout taunts at sporting events to the other team.
You shout taunts?
Taunts, but my taunts are, I just try to like take them out of what they're thinking. Like if somebody's taking a free throw and it's the other team, I'll yell something like, "You got a phone call, Trevor! You've got a phone call. I think it's your mom."
And nowadays that would work.
Yeah.
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 A text. You have a text.
Well, Kelly Dormandy, thank you for getting us to lift the dead weight out of our lives and our bodies. Paula, based on what you've been told, what advice can you give our listeners about strength and conditioning?
Dave Fortin, could I have some background music for exercise science? Nice. Yeah. Chucks or canvas high tops are good shoes for squatting, but when you stand up, you have to change your shoes. Your abs are the muscles beneath your ribcage. I'm not sure what shoes you wear to strengthen them. Your core is the connection of the hips and shoulders to support the spine. Strengthening your core can be done by lying on your back with your knees up and feet on the floor and pushing your pelvis up so you're flat. It's best done in spiked heels. You warm up to get your blood flowing so you don't pull a muscle. Now, if you get injured while you warm up, don't expect a lot of sympathy from the governor of Kentucky.
Thank you. And thank you. Kelly Dormandy is Assistant Athletics Director for Strength and Conditioning at Loyola Marymount University and the Head Coach for Strength and Conditioning for the Los Angeles Sparks. Thank you so much for being on our show, Kelly.
Thanks, Kelly.
When we come back, we'll find out why our brains are good at telling people apart. Thanks to Dr. Irving Biederman, who I do not recognize. That's coming up on Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. The cat of the week is Millie from Manchester, New Hampshire. Thank you, Dave Fortin. Paula, you're braving the polar vortex again and heading out into the cold, I understand.
I am. On March 2nd, I'll be in New Haven, Connecticut at the Schubert Theater. And March 8th, I'm in Rochester, New York at the Hochstein Performance Hall.
That's a great... I love Rochester, New York. And is the Hochstein a performance hall that Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me played?
I can't remember,
but we were there together, I think.
I'm having a lot of memory problems, Adam.
Yes. Also, your book, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness, which I understand you don't remember the title of.
Yeah. Did I write that?
Yeah, you did. It's now out in paperback, and it's available for download as an audiobook, also read by Paula Poundstone, I'm reading here.
I read that. You know, I'll tell you, I'm glad I did that, because for a while, what I was doing was just riding in people's cars, reading aloud to them.
That is so inefficient.
Logistically, this has been much better.
That's great. And I want to point out to listeners that if you're done reading Paula's book, you can still read mine. The novel Schrodinger's Ball is still available, published by Random House, well reviewed and available on Amazon as an ebook or Apple Books and stuff like that.
I love that.
Yeah. Adam Felber's the name. Now you can find out about that book, upcoming tour dates, and a ton of stuff on the website known as
PaulaPoundstone.com.
PaulaPoundstone.com. Thank you, house band Dave Fortin. Paula, we've both had moments where we couldn't recognize a face, right?
Many times.
Many times.
Many times.
That's a thing that we have in common.
Yeah. Yeah. Part of it is I panic when I just get panicky.
Right. And I have a thing. I think I've told you this before. Yeah. Like, I can't go from 2D to 3D. So when I, and you know, I work in the entertainment business. So when I meet somebody famous, there's almost zero chance that I'll know who they are.
You knew me right away when you saw me.
Right, because I was told, here's Paula Poundstone, Adam, say hello to her. No, but no, it's true. The worst example I have was in the 90s, I was at this party, and I was talking to this old dude for like 5 minutes or more at a buffet. We were joking about shrimp and how to find it at a buffet. Mm-hmm. And I go back to my girlfriend and my two other friends, my now wife, and they said, what were you talking to Paul Newman about all that time?
And you had no idea it was Paul Newman?
Zero idea. I remembered thinking, wow, those are really blue eyes.
So, like, the fact that he was mixing up salad dressing?
He was serving me my salad at the buffet.
Mean nothing to
nothing.
You?
Nothing. And then he offered me some popcorn. Nothing.
Yeah. And when he kept going, shaking it up here, boss, shaking it up here, boss, nothing?
Nothing.
Wow.
Nothing.
Wow. So you have a problem.
The minute I looked back at him from across the room, it like everything popped into focus. And there I am looking at Paul Newman.
There he is. Yeah. You know, there was a comic... I assume he's still around. His name is Rich Scheidner.
Right.
And I knew him in the 80s from hanging out at the Improv, except for I eventually came to think of him when people say, have you guys met before? I would say, for the longest time, I'd go, no. And he'd go, yeah, we met.
Oh.
And this happened like several times before. Right. Finally, in my head, he became, oh, the guy who I can never remember.
Oh.
And that's Rich Scheidner.
But now you know his name. How do you know his name now?
Because I used this method,
the guy I never remember Rich Schneiderman.
Yeah.
Schneidman?
No, Rich Scheidner.
Scheidner.
Yeah.
He's still a comic?
I have no idea. I assume so.
All right. Well, Rich, if you're out there, Paul is sorry she didn't recognize you all those times. So there
exactly.
might be
because I have a thing.
Yeah.
I have a thing going on.
She has a thing,
on.
And we're going to find out if you have a thing or if there is a such thing as a thing with that. And all about the mechanics of facial recognition, here we have professor of neuroscience, psychology, and computer science at USC and director of the Image Understanding Laboratory there at USC, Dr. Irving Biederman.
Well, thank you, Dr.
Biederman,
for being here. So what is facial recognition?
Well, first of all, it's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for inviting me.
Sorry, I should have given you time for your intro and your opening statements. That's not going to count against
right,
your time.
Right, okay. Yeah. So what is face recognition? The way most people understand it and the way scientists understand it as well is that when you look at a person's face, you're able to activate some representation of that person in memory, something that you've learned about them. Or, and this is the most impressive act of face recognition, you know you don't know that person. That might be incorrect, but you come up empty-handed. That means you've gone through the thousands, and we've estimated how many faces the average person might know.
Oh, wow.
And
what is it?
Well, for well-connected 20-year-old, socially well-connected 20-year-old, it's in the order between about 3 and 5,000.
Wow.
Faces that just instantly their brain will say, I know this person.
Yes.
Okay. And how about for a well-connected gentleman of in about the age of 50?
About the same.
Oh, about the same. The same.
Huh. So you don't meet a lot more people?
You might have a bit more because you've encountered more people.
Right. In 30 years.
Though one of the things that the 20-year-olds have over us is they're on Facebook all the time.
Okay. Right.
Does
that help
media.
Them recognize?
Oh, yeah.
I would think that only they could recognize what someone else ate. Or someone else in a bathing suit.
Well, faces on Facebook.
Well, we've actually tested it.
Oh, yeah. Not just meals.
So some of these students, let's say at USC, have hundreds of Facebook friends.
Yeah.
And we've tested them as to whether they could recognize their faces and individuate them. And the answer appears to be yes, to a very large percent.
We have found one thing that is not evil about Facebook. That's cool.
Well,
Yeah.
No, everything else is evil about Facebook. No,
there's a couple of things I like.
You know, I'm...
It's a vital grandchild picture delivery device in families.
Great. Yeah, well, that makes up for what Vladimir has done.
It sure does. We'll think about that when the mushroom clouds start rising.
Yeah, exactly.
At least Granny got her pictures of her infant.
Yes, thank goodness.
So I guess Paula and I, are the things that we have, is that a thing?
Yes.
Okay.
So of all the perceptual differences amongst people, the one where we see the most variability, or put it this way, we see very little variability in the recognition of objects or scenes. So when they edit movies here in Hollywood, they only have one person in the editing room, typically the film editor.
Right.
And if it works for her, it works for people all over the planet.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, for faces, we see quite large individual differences.
Okay.
Most people appear not to have much of a problem. That is, if they're familiar with the person, they'll be able to recognize them. Though, even given the average, what we think of as an average range of people, there are differences that we could pick up with careful testing in the laboratory. Usually, the brighter people are the more sensitive they are to whatever deficits they have.
Okay.
So that you and Paula might feel you're not quite completely proficient in face recognition is actually saying something positive about you.
That we're aware that we're not good at it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So what about Paula and this Rick Scheidner name?
Adam's not good with names either. Rich Scheidner.
Okay. Well,
he has a name thing.
I was really surprised about that because I looked him up on the web,
mm-hmm.
and he is quite distinctive, and certainly he's quite distinctive for a stand-up comedian. Mm-hmm. He's tall, slender,
yeah.
and very good-looking.
And he has no nose.
He
has a nose.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he does.
Okay. And one would have thought, given the context with which you had encountered him mm-hmm. at stand-up clubs, comedy clubs, that he would be a bit different from the usual vulnerable comedian type, you know, uh-huh. Danny DeVito or...
Yeah, schlumpy.
Well,
you
okay.
wanted to use the word schlumpy, no. You didn't.
Spare me, please.
Vulnerable. Okay. So what is that?
So I was surprised that that individual didn't stand out. Now,
well, he did after about the 10th time I met him.
So you could have been using his body, the differences.
I wasn't using his body.
Yes, you were.
just for that two or three nights.
That's what I remember.
Hashtag he too.
Yeah. Can't tell you what he looked like, but I used his body.
So face recognition is, in fact, much more difficult than people think. And if you take away easy cues, 99% of the time we're recognizing people. Uh-huh. We have a context, they're in a family, they're in a class. And we also have easy cues like their hairstyle, their voice, and everything else.
Yeah.
And we use that to the max.
Right.
Once we abstract that.
Yeah, when someone's not in the environment they're used to seeing them in.
I can't see Paul Newman at the buffet?
Yes, because he was. Well, actually, if he was serving you shrimp, you should have guessed it more than if he was serving you lettuce.
He wasn't really serving me shrimp, but we were joking around about the fact that you can always find the shrimp.
But yes, likely you weren't even looking at his face. You were looking at the shrimp or something like that.
I was looking right in his face, full on, the way it appears on the bottle of sauce.
Okay, well,
but that's not an accurate drawing on the sauce.
But it's certainly out of context.
And okay, so maybe that's what it is. You take him out of context.
Yeah, then it's much, much more difficult.
Okay. Now, I want to go back to Rich Scheidner for a minute now. Now, after Paula failed to recognize him many times, mm-hmm. to an embarrassing degree, she then started to recognize him as the guy whose name she didn't know. What I want to ask you, Dr. Biederman, is that a separate thing, name to face? Because I think a lot of people have that problem, and I feel like it's got to be a different part of your brain.
That is a gigantic problem, and it's the biggest. If you take people in the lab and ask them to name the celebrities, you show them celebrities that they're very familiar with, they will block.
Yeah. You showed me a picture of Matthew, what's his
McConaughey.
Name? McConaughey.
Yeah, we both did a test.
Who was
before,
great in Dallas Buyers Club, but is just painful in those Lincoln commercials.
And your point is? He's painful in those Lincoln commercials.
Yeah.
Not really a question for you, Doc.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, but he is.
Paul did want to get that out there.
But I recognize him, but I couldn't remember his whole name.
Why we block on a name, which is very different from why we may not recognize a face, or why mm-hmm. some people have great trouble in recognizing any face. Names are the one label that we have, the one kind of verbal content that we have, where we only have one route to get to those words. So if I was to ask you, who's the prime minister of the UK now?
Right.
You might block.
I did.
Right.
Okay.
I got Theresa May.
Right. Oh, okay. Well, one out of two, 50% for the program is pretty good. Okay.
Yeah, between us.
That's why he's here every show.
So the reason is why there's only one way to get to that a name, and you use it only once.
When you say one way, you mean in the brain?
In terms of the way we... think about memory. So you have to have that name, Theresa May. You'll only use it in the context of that's the Prime Minister of the UK.
Yeah.
That's the only way to it.
Right. Or the only context you'll use it.
Right. Unless you happen to play Mahjong with her.
Cars or pop cans or chairs. We're using those all the time. Many different routes.
Lots of contexts. Yeah.
Oh, I see.
And they have a very high frequency of lots of contexts with which we will maybe verbalize them or think about them. But there's only one way to get to a name.
For example,
so face to name, that's just you either got it or you don't.
There's a single link to get there.
If somebody says to me, hand me a soda, I know what a soda is right away. And but if somebody says to me, Theresa May, I might have to go, wait, who is she again?
Right.
Guy.
Hand me to Theresa May. Nothing.
Couldn't do it. I couldn't even do it.
A diet or regular, sir?
diet Theresa May. Dr. Biederman, you administered a test to both me and Paula before we started this interview. It was quite painful. I didn't think the spikes were necessary. But
I got an electrical charge when I came up with the name Matthew.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of McConaughey.
But it was a fairly simple test and a fascinating test on like how good we are at recognizing faces and connecting them to names and stuff like that. How'd we do?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Why? Jeez, that was a
50% again.
So
like I did well
news.
As Paula Crater.
So you were a bit slow. So on a test that most people find very easy, it's called the doppelganger test, where you see a pair of faces, one not famous, the other famous, and you simply have to say who's famous. That gets around this problem of being able to name the blocking on the name.
That's why we do that.
And I was slow on it.
You took some time. Yeah. And Paula was too. Again,
didn't want to make Adam feel bad.
I don't think so. You just stared at that for a long time, the Angelina Jolie one. You just
Well, because I had a moral issue, which is I had already heard you say Angelina
excuses,
Jolie.
Excuses. Okay. Right. High honesty questions.
I didn't want to cheat.
High honesty.
Yeah, I didn't want to.
And how did we do any other aspects of the test? Like the...
We'd have to get people about your age, so there is some...
Oh, you know what? Can I just say one quick thing? Fuck you!
Wait, what? He's not calling you old.
No, I believe he was.
No.
Get people about my age? Well, where are you going to find them?
Well, once you
they're in homes all over the city.
Yeah, well, what do you mean? So you'd have to find... So the age being a factor, it wouldn't be a fair comparison. So,
particularly, you could be a little slower naming things that are coming up compared to, let's say, a 20-year-old or something like that.
Okay, they're very fast with the brains and stuff.
So when someone can't recognize faces, and Adam and me, we weren't great at it, but you think that's because we're elderly. So
No.
When someone can't do it, and it's really a thing, like a disability.
Like
blindness. Yeah, what is that?
Well, 2% of the population are what's called prosopagnosic, which is the scientific or technical term for face blindness.
Prosopagnosic.
Prosopagnosic.
He was a comedian that Paula used to work with.
No, you know, the prosopagnosics would have a support group, but they can't recognize one another.
Moses is the prosopagnosic.
They do have a support group.
Do they really?
On Facebook, there's the prosopagnosic group. I joined it, not because I'm prosopagnosic, but...
You're spying on them. Because Vlad asked you to.
One wants to try to understand. And the closer you get, well, what might seem like a minor problem.
No, I'm sure it's a big problem.
To them, at the end of the day, a number of them just talk about how exhausted they are. And this is what they're avoiding. They're avoiding the social embarrassment. When they go to the supermarket or at a business meeting, they're at the meeting around the table for 3 hours, they go in the hallway, and they can't recognize any of their faces.
Wow,
For 3 hours. Or it's a neighbor they've known for 20 years, and they don't recognize them. Or
that's super stressful.
Yeah.
Now, is there a form of that where it takes you just a lot of exposures to get somebody's face?
So there are some attempts. We're trying to do it to come up with a training regimen to make people better.
It can be.
I think it's a really long shot because most of the reasons why people
don't
have deficit is it's most of the reasons why people have this deficit is because of genetics. They're born that way.
Yeah. And it's something in the brain.
Something in the vast amount of people. 2% of the population have this condition. Overwhelmingly, it's genetic. There are some who get it because of lesions, because of accident or stroke. And there are a few areas in the brain that are dedicated to do face individuation.
That's the only thing that section of the brain does?
Yes.
Wow.
Because it's such a critical problem. Yeah. We're social animals.
Right. Yes.
And we need to
be able to individuate others.
Well, also for safety, right? Otherwise, you're just letting any asshole in your house.
Well, you think about it in prehistoric times.
In your cave.
Yeah.
You're walking in the jungle. You see someone there. And the question is he from your tribe or your enemy tribe in the next cave?
Yeah. So you're like, fuck, don't tell me. Hold on. Wait a minute. Yeah, big nose.
Big nose, yeah.
Huge feet.
Oh, you're from the other tribe.
Yeah. Okay, bent over. Oh, Cro-Magnon. No. It's org.
Is there a part of your brain that makes you unaware when you're making noises? Because I am going to throttle Bonnie Burns. What were you eating back there, Bonnie?
Three Musketeers.
Wasn't a question.
Bonnie is my manager and one of our producers, and she has a problem with crinkling.
Okay.
I don't know. There's a whole section of the brain that deals with that, and we think it's genetic. Thank goodness she adopted.
Three Musketeers.
Yeah. All right. So there's a section of the brain that does.
There are a few sections. Yeah. Vision, higher level vision, by which we recognize scenes that when we're channel surfing in a fraction of a second, we recognize what the scene is or who the faces are.
Yeah.
That runs along the bottom of the brain.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
It starts out at the back part of the brain called the occipital lobes, and is an early part
the occipital
of that
lobes.
Called V1 by scientists, the first visual area, and goes all the way to the anterior temporal lobes in the front of the brain. And that's in the posterior part, the back part, that's where we're forming images of the world.
Okay.
And all the information we need for a face is right there.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out in these areas that are a few synapses removed, those are where we have these special areas that are dedicated to face processing.
Oh,
and
wow.
What they do is take that image directly from the first cortical area and come up with a matching to.
So the minute our brain sees that it's a face, that image gets sent to this other area.
Yeah, exactly.
Where all the recognition stuff clicks.
Exactly.
And there's like a file cabinet in there, is that right?
So it's associated with later areas where you have all the knowledge about that person. So you see a quick flash of Obama's face. You know he was president. You know he was senator from Illinois. You know he has two daughters and so on and so forth.
And then you just cry because he's not there anymore.
Yeah.
Well,
okay. Jesus. Goes right to the emotional part of my brain.
No. That is a joke.
For the record, Dr. Biederman is not wearing a MAGA hat.
So a lesion to those areas will cause people to become prosopagnosic. There is work trying to understand what are the differences for the vast percent of prosopagnosics who are just born that way. And it looks as if the connections in the back face areas to the front parts of the brain where you have all this knowledge are not as efficient.
Right. Interesting.
But also they have trouble even distinguishing faces. So that test that you took earlier, trying to match one face on top to two very similar faces on bottom, that's where they fail.
They can literally look at two different faces side by side and not be able to tell the difference.
Exactly.
That's fascinating.
So do you use lab rats in your testing?
No, not rats.
Because
we use other animals.
Do they recognize each other? You don't use them. You don't know.
No, they often use olfaction.
Oh, yeah. So they use smell?
Yes.
Yeah. People are offended if you do that.
Now computer facial recognition is a giant thing right now. Getting machines to recognize faces, like Tony Anita Hall's iPhone recognizes her face. And I understand that your object and facial recognition is something that you've worked on with computers.
Yes.
Is the way that we're training computers to recognize faces like the way our brains recognize faces?
Well, the training regimen could be very different. It's actually very different.
Okay.
But the inspiration, certainly in the first phase of face recognition software that could do that, was completely inspired by how the brain does it.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
And the model that we use to scale the differences between faces, so we could determine in that, for example, that test that you took, we could vary how difficult it was to get a match between the sample face and the two similar faces on the bottom, was completely determined by a biological model of the way the brain initially represents images of faces. And the early computer vision models were done that way. What has changed is the amount of practice or training you give these computer models. So a three-year-old will by and large be able to recognize people around her and start building up to a few thousand faces. These models now are shown millions of images of faces, and they're all stored with perfect memory. So, and then it's a question of getting the similarity of a new face you have to one of those, let's say, faces in memory.
Do you work on such projects?
We work at what would be primarily how people are doing it or how brains are doing it rather than the implementation.
Oh, so you don't tell computer people how to do it?
They come to us to try to understand, because we're so good and amazing at it, under certain conditions, they come to us to try to understand how are people able to do it.
Because it strikes me that something nefarious could come of all this facial recognition stuff.
What could possibly go wrong?
Giving
the machines the keys to our identities. Yeah, I don't understand where you...
I'm a little bit worried about that.
I think we're all completely safe.
Yeah, sure.
We're already there. I mean, they, of course, can recognize people. And
now, do computers, we were talking before, you showed us, one of the things you showed us in a test is how when you rotate your face just 20 degrees, it completely changes how we can recognize faces. And I believe that what you said was that Angelina Jolie turning her face 20 degrees to the side makes her, is as
unappealing to Brad.
Makes her unappealing to Brad. Makes her as different from her full-on face as she is. Her full-on face is from an image of Will Smith.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's that, and that's why it's so different.
Now, do machines have the same problem?
The way they train them, if they've seen, for a given individual, they've seen all the views together.
Yeah.
So that difficulty we have with being able to recognize a face from a frontal view, say, to a 20-degree rotated view, only holds with unfamiliar faces.
Why is that?
Because
so if somebody grabs my backpack when I'm leaving here tonight, which is likely to happen in this neighborhood, and
probably going to be a possum.
And I see them running away... And I describe their face to the cops. If they turn their head 20 degrees, I would be describing a different person.
That's why people always rob you sideways.
Yeah, they're going to sidle up to you.
Well, what we can't do, what we don't have language for, is to describe a face. So those tests that you took, where you had, let's say, Matthew McConaughey, and someone that was a doppelganger to him, and you could not describe the difference in their faces, but you could recognize Matthew McConaughey. And that's because we don't have words for the initial way the brain represents images of faces. And that's why we can't describe a face. We can describe objects in terms of their parts and the relations amongst the parts, but faces...
Maybe you couldn't describe it. Like, I could describe your face, not instantly.
Well, that's a question. Could you describe it enough where if a very similar person, a doppelganger, could you describe it to someone else that they'd be able to distinguish that person?
Well, what about police sketch artists? Somebody must be describing it good enough to them. Look at the Unabomber. He was in a hoodie.
Yeah.
And anybody could draw a hoodie. That's not good.
So actually, the people have a great deal of trouble recognizing faces from the sketches, from the police sketches.
Oh, they do?
So you get some general things about it. Oh, the beard, the general race, age, sex. But once you get beyond these simple categories, which we can learn not by individually describing faces, but groups of faces. So older, younger, male, female, and so on. I showed you some simple ways in which we could distinguish distinguish male from females, then we could do that. But describe within a given age, sex, race, and level of attractiveness, we don't have words for that.
I think if I'm not wrong, what you're saying is that the way we describe faces with words has very little to do with the way our brains recognize faces. There's a mismatch there.
We can map the neural patterns that we're using to recognize faces onto words. It's the same thing we have with simple motor movements. If I reach to pick up a Coke can with my hand from the image, the question is, how do I translate that image to instructions to my musculature?
Yeah.
And we don't have any words for that. So we're aware of the goal of trying to pick up the can.
But we don't know how we're doing
it. That's why robotics is such a difficult field. Why you don't want, if you're wearing nice clothing, you don't want a robotic waiter to serve you a cup of coffee. Okay.
Oh, because it might. Oh, because it will spill on me?
Paul and I are both good with robots serving us coffee because our clothes are not particularly
special,
I think, right?
Okay. I'll
have a double latte.
I'm dressed for robot service.
We are constantly ready to be served by robots.
That's going
to
be like a section of a store. You know how the evening wear. Do you have any robot service wear?
Yeah, it's basically the kind of slumpy stuff that we wear. All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Irving Biederman, for helping us recognize each other for what we are. This lady over here, Paula. That's right, Paula. What advice can you give our listeners about facial recognition?
Hey, Dave, give me a little facial recognition background. Oh, who dat? Facial recognition is done in a special part of the brain that's just for that. And then it gets sent to another part of the brain for further information and processing. Some people genetically suffer from an inability to do this, or you can get lesions on your facial recognition part, and that really screws it up. Rich Scheidner is tall and good-looking, but that won't keep the lesions off the facial recognition part of the brain of the people who meet him. People who have this problem are called prosopagnosics, which seems especially cruel because who wants to be called a prosopagnosic? If you roll over in the morning and say to the guy in bed beside you, "Who the hell are you?" you're either a prosopagnosic or a really busy hooker. There is a prosopagnosic support group on Facebook, and Vladimir Putin spies on them, and he actually uses his real face in his profile pic.
Dr. Irving Biederman is a professor of neuroscience, psychology, and computer science at USC and director of the USC Image Understanding Laboratory. Dr. Biederman, thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks a lot. You're terrific.
It's terrific. We'll be back right after this.
Unless you wish you could trade in your own family for the Pearsons, Inside Pop is definitely not for you.
Sean, that's a little extreme and also not quite true.
Okay, Amita, how about Inside Pop is the podcast for people who love and appreciate the best pop culture has to offer?
Oh, much better.
In every episode, we interview the people who create the culture you crave.
Past interviews include the production designer for Fargo and Tony DeCray from the DreamWorks Story Department.
You'll also get the very best pop culture recommendations in our Big Sell segment.
Plus, the opinions of two TV producers who are pop culture obsessives and actually do wish Sterling K. Brown was our cousin.
Kissing cousins, that is.
Listen to Inside Pop every other Wednesday on the Maximum Fun Podcast Network.
There's nothing quite like sailing in the calm international waters on my ship, the SS Biopic.
Avast! It's actually pronounced biopic.
No, you dingus! It's biopic!
Who the hell says that? It's biopic.
Because it's the words for biography and picture.
All right, that is enough. Ahoy, I'm Dave Holmes. I'm the host of the newly rebooted podcast, formerly known as International Waters, designed to resolve petty but persistent arguments like this. How? By pitting two teams of opinionated comedians against each other with trivia and improv games, of course. Winner takes home the right to be right.
What podcast be this?
It's called Troubled Waters, where we disagree to disagree!
Yeah.
Thank you. Our show is artist-owned and listener-supported. Help us raise funds by buying one of our Maximum Fun t-shirts. And again, they are a perfect layer for a polar vortex. They're only available at MaxFunStore.com, and they come in a variety of sizes.
Variety of sizes?
Yes.
A little possum size.
I don't think we have possum size. We do have extra small, but you know what it is? Size. They don't really have good shoulders. I'd imagine that possums would be bad in...
Well, they have the tiny ones come with shoulder pads, so.
Oh.
Yeah, don't worry about that.
So make the possum look more buff and just keep the shirt on. That's good then. All right, we'll get those at MaxFunStore.com.
MaxFunStore.com. That's a good place to get them.
Thank you.
And you know, I have a theory that if every listener tells a friend about Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, we will have 5 more listeners in no time. So here's some simple sample dialogue.
You went ahead and wrote yourself some more sample dialogue.
Here's some sample dialogue.
All right.
Listener's friend, wow, that guy took your parking space and you just smiled and waved. Didn't you once follow a guy to his home, find out who his dentist was, and send him repeated fraudulent time to reschedule dental postcards? Listener, that was before I began listening to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. All of the laughter keeps me in a really peaceful place, and Adam Felber is on every show.
You know, I have 2 things to say about that. Number one, your listener sample dialogue that you're giving to our listeners has become so specific that I feel like it's not becoming very useful.
This is useful.
I feel like you would be a very specific person who did that. And
no, that's it. We want everyone.
Right.
We want as many listeners as we can get.
Right.
And we certainly don't want to ignore the person who used
who
to send
that.
The repeated fraudulent time to reschedule dental postcards.
I feel like that might be a very small sample of people indeed. The other thing is you went ahead again with the Adam Felbers on every show.
Yeah.
And I want to point out that it has gotten to the point where that phrase,
Adam Felber's on every show,
is presented as a compliment but isn't on Twitter all the time.
Yeah.
If you go through our reviews on iTunes and there's, and we
do they mention that you're on every show?
You know they do, Paula. They do. Like every 4th or 5th fucking review mentions that.
Adam Felber's on every show. That's you should be honored.
I am not honored. I'm insulted. It's not a compliment.
You know
and you're enjoying this.
If you weren't on every show, I would not recognize you. Because I'm what's the name of that thing again?
Prognostic.
Yeah. I'm a prognostic.
We got to get that doctor back to tell us about forgetting words, because I don't even remember that name of the comedian you couldn't
recognize. My memory is gone.
Between us, that guy doesn't exist. All right. Now, if you want to submit a theme song or have an idea for the show, email us at nobodylistenstopaulapoundstone@gmail.com. And you can follow both Paula and me, Adam Felber, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone is hosted by Paula Poundstone and yours truly, that same Adam Felber. Produced by Paula Poundstone, a different Adam Felber, Captain Crinkle Bonnie Burns, and Ken Lezebnik and Tony Anita Hull. Technical direction by Ray Horseman and mixing by Anthony Alfaro. Special thanks to tonight's house band, Dave Fort. And Dave, you are fantastic on that double bass. And thanks again to our guests, Kelly Dormandy and Dr. Irving Biederman. Our head of security tonight was Jonah Knuckles Glickman. Transcription services for this show are provided by TranscribeMe for your very special Paula Poundstone discount. Ooh. Use code Paula Poundstone when placing your order at TranscribeMe.com.
That's our show for tonight. Won't somebody please listen to me?
Oh, yeah. Come on. Don't know the name, but the face rings a bell. Yeah.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Listener supported.